Under this plan, small-scale academic establishments are aggregated into a network and operated under the auspices of major universities. This saves the country millions of dollars, and educational institutions are able to share financial and educational resources. This scheme carries many benefits. First, it helps academic institutions increase the quality of education and expand the reach of academic incubators. And second, it helps the government and higher education centers efficiently allocate funds and resources to develop focused programs for research. R&D funding is also an investment in regional innovation ecosystems that leads to advanced technology production needed in industries. There are around 3.5 million students in Iran, and increasing the number of graduates has an overall positive effect on high-tech employment in the long run.
Universities play an important role in determining a region's capacity for innovation and transforming new ideas into economic activity. They educate the local workforce, which creates human capital and produces intellectual property. Universities also indirectly contribute through their research activities, which other businesses can use to make commercial value. These foundational research activities help create and advance industries in many ways.
For example, the medical sector is one that has greatly benefited from advanced technology developed by universities and research-based firms. 56% of medical equipment available in the world market in 2018 had Iranian versions. That was based on figures from the National Medical Device Directorate. Some of these items were also on the US sanctions list. These products were developed domestically and produced along the lines of international standards, allowing them to compete in markets abroad. Another advantage of indigenizing advanced medical equipment was reducing costs and dependence on imports. Based on the National Medical Device Directorate, Iran currently exports its medical products to 54 countries across the world. In 2018, the domestic market for these items was estimated to be worth nearly $3 billion.
Okay, I believe it's time for me to take a break and pass the show over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field.
Hello, everyone. We are at Inatex International Innovation and Technology Exhibition. Why are we here? Well, this is a perfect place for different businesses and entrepreneurs to promote what they do and their businesses and to find investors. So let's dive in and find out more.
Focusing on science, technology, and innovation ecosystems, the International Innovation and Technology Exhibition is the meeting point of businessmen, technologists, industrialists, and researchers of different countries, held not only to introduce products and form partnerships, but also to provide various insights on the latest global competitive pricing, quality standards, developments, scientific findings, and economic technological ideas. In addition to introducing state-of-the-art technologies to large and medium industries, this event tries to connect customers of technology products with their respective manufacturers and offer investment opportunities to investors of technology and startups.
Among all companies that are active here in this event, we have found one which has done an exemplary activity, and that is supporting smaller local businesses in their province, and that is Rafsanjan Sarchishme Copper Company. Some 400 companies are in this exhibition. Now, in addition to normal products that you can find out everywhere, they have got some sorts of applications.
The
In addition to their exhibition in this innovation park, they also have different events, like different companies and entrepreneurs can present and promote their products in order to show themselves and to attract investors. That's something amazing.
This exhibition has hosted the most significant players in the innovation and technology ecosystem over the years. This stage is not limited to a specific area of technology and innovation, but rather aims to increase the synergy of technology experts and entrepreneurs coming into contact. Therefore, the latest innovation and technology trends are reviewed at this event every year. Things such as metaverse, metadata, Internet of Things, physics, cloud computing, and blockchain.
Okay, I guess that's the end of today's show. Today, for the first time, I visited an exhibition like this, a place for different businesses, companies, and entrepreneurs to see one another and to find a way to cooperate. And that's the specific feature of this event. Thank you.
Many thanks for that awesome report. There is so much more that can be said about the home appliance industry and its related trades, so let's check out some news and trends in this sector. The country is keen to bolster and further develop the home appliance sector, so it has launched a new innovation centre that focuses on making products needed in this industry.
Some of the products being developed here include inverter compressors and other integrated products using artificial intelligence and electronics, among others. The centre also will use nanoscience knowledge to create a new range of smart and technological products. The goal is to complement the tech ecosystem by providing a space where knowledge-based companies and startups carry out concentrated activities. It is also meant to indigenize products for domestic needs and exports.
Iran's home appliance market is worth roughly $6 billion per year, but industry participants say 40% of this market is dominated by contraband. So, how has the government responded to this issue?
The government has carried out several schemes to combat this problem with heavier regulation. One step was to implement an ID program for all home appliances being sold. Another was the closure of over 300 websites offering smuggled goods. In June 2020, the first phase of the National Anti-Smuggling Plan was implemented. The Association of Industry of Household Appliances says such initiatives have reduced the number of smuggled goods to nearly $900 million. That's in contrast to the year before, when some $2 billion worth of trafficked goods were traded.
Well, that wraps up our program for today. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So far, in everything that we have gone through in this simple book, very valuable book as well, is that we can live in anywhere, any part of the world, and uphold our religious values without compromising, and also be successful in coexisting with others and not forfeiting anything as far as our belief system is concerned. Without doubt, we do understand that animals themselves who have been created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala have a benefit, and they weren't created for out of vanity or for no reason. And this benefit goes back not only to nature itself, but also to us human beings. There is misuse towards animals. And of course, zulm and oppression can be perpetrated onto animals. And Islam also has a lot to say about that. Islam says that you're able to use animals for security, you're able to use animals for cultivation, you know, and these are among the many ni'mas of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. As far as cattle is concerned, as far as birds are concerned, as far as beehiving is concerned, you know, these are also things that have been mentioned in the Quran. You know, the Quran has also mentioned numerous surahs, giving the title of that surah the name of a certain animal. Al-Baqarah, Al-An'am, Baqarah is the largest surah in the Quran. Al-An'am, Al-Nahl, for example, you know, so on and so forth. And they give us that kind of financials, they're also able to give us that kind of financial security and support. If we could say millions of families around the world at that time, and also today as well. So giving us that need to survival and in any kind of form of entertainment. And I think it's important for us to mention what kind of entertainment. I am going to discuss that, but things like, you know, camel riding or horse riding or things like that. You know, maybe in today's society, zoos as well, you know, or circuses. Although, this is my personal opinion, you know, a zoo needs to be made in such a way where it doesn't put that strenuous pressure on the animal and turn that cage into a prison for the animal. So, zookeeping or putting animals behind cages in such a way that is detrimental to the animal itself is also considered to be a kind of zulm as well. And so that's why, you know, open range zoos and animal farms and things like that, for the sake of education, for the sake of kids and adults going and meeting animals up close and personal, is a good thing, as long as, you know, there are certain conditions met.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
There are many lessons.
Of the book
by those prophets. And
eat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
In any case, whether it does come to nurturing of animals and breeding animals and benefiting from animals, land animals, sea animals, and also, you know, having cures from animals as well. Of course, we don't believe in using them as lab testing, for example, if not necessary for the sake of cosmetics, unfortunately, which is what some of these major brands do these days. But whatever the case may be, you know, there needs to be some kind of regulation as far as usage of animals are concerned. And, you know, until today, we are able to see how useful animals were. You know, large animals, you know, elephants, you know, and even using elephants in, for example, for armies, for battles and things like that, as we said, as far as defense is concerned, even for clothing, you know, with silkworms. Until today, we are able to find traces of usage of clothes made from silk. Of course, that meant that, you know, there were silkworm farms cultivating silk for the sake of using them to make clothes and other important items for human usage. Yes, when we do come across the surahs from the Holy Quran that have the title of an animal, Suratul Fil, Suratul Nahl, Suratul Baqarah, Suratul Ankabut, Suratul Naml, Suratul An'am, this kind of hints to us that there is a close connection, a close tie between us, the human beings, and animals. Now we understand that also in fiqh there are many ahkam related to animals, not only what is halal to eat, what is haram to eat, what is mustahab to eat, what is makruh to eat, but also issues to do with behavior, how we conduct ourselves with animals, how we treat animals, how we deal with animals, how we are able to use animals in the halal way, in the haram way, but also when it comes to important things like hunting and things like that. Now, we know that when it comes to the topic of dhabh and the slaughtering of animals, Islam has a lot to say about that. And I think this is another very kind of controversial topic that my brothers and sisters need to get into. What is the humane way for the killing of an animal? And is it stunning? Is it electrocuting? Is it shooting? Is it slaughtering of the four main arteries? Is it by use of an arrow? Is it by use of a bullet? Is it by use of a sharp knife? What is it, you know? And we're always coming across these, you know, these theories in today's modern society that speak about the Muslim way being the worst way, unfortunately, in some studies. In other studies and other neutral studies, it's been proven that the most effective way for the slaughtering of an animal, for the terminating of the life of an animal in the most humane way, is the Islamic way. And it's also the healthiest way as well. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's fresh episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio, I have the honor and privilege of being joined by my sister in faith and humanity and a special guest, Sister Razia Shamli. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, my dear sister.
We've been talking a few times in our show about plastic surgery.
In women, we've talked about.
Oh, we talked about. Oh, so today we want to talk about plastic surgery specified to men.
Yeah.
Because we talked about women.
Yeah.
And their plastic surgery.
We didn't really talk about women either. Men do not have this problem as much as women
yes,
do.
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to say. Men honestly aren't that self-conscious about themselves as women are.
You know?
And that's why they're not targeted as much either. And enterprises and corporations haven't been able to feed on this insecurity as much as it's been able to do with women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why cosmetics are targeting women,
yeah.
Plastic surgery, fashion. All of these things are targeting women because women are more self-conscious about their appearance rather than men.
Yeah, that is true. As I said, one of the reasons that women have this addiction to the social media is, like, I was looking at this really nice debate between two guys on YouTube, and he was like, when a woman she has her Instagram, she's a teen, she's 17 and she has an Instagram page and she's just posting, you know, from time to time her daily life. And then she goes on a vacation and she starts posting one picture of herself in a bikini, exposing her skin. And that's when an explosion happens. Likes, new followers. And she goes into the explore. And she gets reward for what she's
dopamine.
Doing.
Bop.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So one action, a lot of reward.
Mm.
Another action. Then she says she goes, like, if she goes on that trip, on a trip once a year, then that reward that she got from all these likes and all this acceptance, even the, you know, the really beautiful girls, they say, oh, nice look. You know, I love, like, what you're wearing, or I love, like, how
your
this
pose,
part of
your body,
looks,
whatever,
right?
Yeah.
That approval, that sense of approval that she gets reinforces in her and motivates her to go on another vacation very soon and more videos and pictures exposing her body. And then it just turns into, it makes a new personality out of her.
But then here's the thing. I'm thinking if the dude was just as ripped, right, and fit as beautiful 17-year-old girl or whatever, he would get a lot of acknowledgement on social media as well, right? Number one, if the girl wasn't so beautiful and fit, she would still get a degree, but a lower degree of acknowledgement. But it would be more in the tone of, it would be more of like a political nuance to it. They would try to be proving a point by acknowledging her.
That even if you're not perfect, you're still beautiful.
Yes, but they don't do it for men.
Things.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what it, and I think that's why the Quran, when it talks about how men and women should be presenting themselves in society, when the Holy Book addresses women, it says, cover yourselves up, number one, and don't flaunt yourselves. Because the Quran knew this is an innate quality of women.
Mm-hmm.
They like to be noticed.
Which verse are you talking about?
When it talks about tabarruj, flaunting themselves, displaying themselves. Because women like to be noticed and praised for
exactly.
their beauty.
The idea
Men,
of acceptance.
Meh,
right?
But for women, that's just like wonderful for them.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, so many things are changing. Although when you're comparing psychologically a girl with a boy, a man with a woman, and of course that need for acceptance is so much higher for a girl. I mean, to be seen as a beautiful girl and to be loved and cherished and to be paid attention. compared to boy, they don't need these things, really.
They need it in another aspect, yeah.
They need it in other aspects. But I think the norms or the social media is creating needs for the boys
totally.
These days. That
just
look
like capitalism, consumerism.
Exactly, that you have to look... you have to be fit. You have to have six packs. You have to have like certain measure, like a chin, or like there are standards, bodily standards for men too these days.
Obviously,
and I'm saying that they are fitting them into the boys'
brains. Is it necessarily a bad thing, though? If it boosts relationships, if it boosts confidence, if it makes you overall healthier, and What's wrong with it?
The problem is that it's not boosting their things. It's turning into many hours of in a day of going to the gym and injecting certain hormones to their bodies.
Yeah, that's why we talked about balance. There is no balance.
Show.
No, that's their problem.
There is no balance.
It doesn't necessarily mean aestheticism and aspiring for beauty is necessarily a wrong thing. John? You are listening to Muslim Lady while we are discussing the interesting topic of plastic surgery and how it applies on the two genders. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, sisters, brothers, ladies, gentlemen. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio.
Like, remember a couple of months ago we were talking about self-care? And we talked about how the Prophet used to have use kohl, perfume, how he used to clean his garments, how he used to, even he had certain handkerchiefs. He used to wipe, you know, wet wipes with the scent of saffron and other like natural fragrances, and how he combed his hair, how he looked at himself in the mirror, how he was careful to use, to remove, you know, extra hair from his body, how he cared to be very attractive for his wives, how he, you know, used henna. And, you know, there's a beautiful hadith that what are the benefits of henna and this and that. We did talk about that.
I remember.
Is the balance.
Yeah.
Not the six packs.
What's wrong with six packs?
If you're injecting...
If you just get natural six packs.
If you're
through diet and hard work.
If you're a father of three children, and if you're a busy working man, and if you can, is it possible for you to have to develop six packs and to have all these responsibilities? The six packs are single guys who don't have any families to take care of.
All right, good for them.
Yeah,
I mean, all of these things, even beauty for women, it is redefined through different stages of her life, you know? Some things that look beautiful on a teen or a woman in her early 20s cannot be pulled off by a more mature woman. Their
Give
style, their fashion, their color choices, even their makeup application changes through the stages of their lives. And it's the same thing for men. At a certain stage, when you're in your early 20s, you're a bachelor, you've got no responsibilities, all you do is hit the books and hit the gym, hey, enjoy your six-pack. And then after a while, you get a little older, you settle down, you have kids, you enjoy the dad bod.
It's becoming a trend these days. Like back like 20 years ago, to have to develop six-pack, it was the job of a very small minority in the society where they were bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Nowadays, many men, like average men, they are tending towards six-packs because...
Wait. Is it hindering their performance in other fields of life?
You know, these days, there is less tendency towards marriage. And obviously, there's more time. They're bachelors.
Uh-huh.
And these bachelors need to continue looking handsome and attractive because they want to have a partner. They want to find a girlfriend.
Okay, then that's just evolution.
No, it's not a good evolution. You know, what I'm just trying to say is that one of the reasons that there is a lot of more plastic surgery these days is because there are so many more single men because they're not in any relationship. And
where are all the women then?
No. The women are also they have their own story. Let's not open their story. Mm-hmm. Now we're just talking about men. So men are tending more towards plastic surgery because, look, if you're in your early 20s and you get married, you get settled, your six pack would be your number 10 priority in life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in your middle 30s and you're still single, your six packs would be your number 2 priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm getting? I'm just saying that because they are not in permanent relationships, because there is no family,
mm-hmm.
these men, they always have to look fresh, sexy, attractive. So they have to have these,
work on themselves.
But as you enter into the relationship, as you said, you enter into the different phases of your life, a physical attraction always will remain something very important until the end of your life, but it will lower down in terms of priority. It will not be your second priority. It will be your fifth priority. And this is my understanding. This is my analysis of why men are tending, opting towards...
plastic surgery?
No, plastic surgery and body fitness. Mm-hmm. The way working on your six packs. One reason that why men are opting more towards certain physical features, like growing a six-pack, developing a six-pack, is because, as you said, in the nature of video games, you have to overcome something, it's a process, and you have to conquer it. And, it's an aim that they have to, pursue, and the reward is great, because the way it has been displayed among the other sex is that, if a man has a six-pack, it looks very attractive to a woman.
Mm.
And it's not a difficult thing to obtain. So he goes after developing it. He spends 6 months on it. And there he goes with a six-pack.
Apply to all men, but this is one way to look at it. Right?
Right.
Because some men, literally, they have a stable partner. Them and their partner are into the healthy lifestyle and bodybuilding, They're not competitive bodybuilders, but that's their method of exercising.
Mm-hmm.
There's that. And then there's, dudes who are just looking to pick up women with their abs. You know, when it comes to that, it doesn't matter whether it's abs or a car or a new haircut or whatever. That is, I feel it's an uncool motif for a man to develop, no matter...
It's an uncool motif?
It's an uncool motif for a man to develop an asset, no matter what that asset is. To pick up women? That's ridiculous.
To develop six-pack because of a woman.
Or whatever else. Or buy an expensive car or whatever. That's all the time we have. This was a more complicated topic than I anticipated. And obviously, we're going to have to talk about it more. You can join us on future episodes of Muslim Lady. Until then, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illa Allah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illa Allah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only Allah.
the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He's the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah,
Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return. The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
In the limelight.
Advocates for independently owned businesses warn that restaurants, gyms, and other main street businesses across the U.S. will be forced to close in the coming month after Republicans in the Senate recently blocked a $48 billion package to provide relief to owners who have struggled to stay afloat during the coronavirus pandemic. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Julia Conley, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Nearly 90,000 Small Businesses in U.S. Expected to Close After Senate GOP Kills Main Street Relief Bill. Here's the story. Advocates for independently owned businesses warn that restaurants, gyms, and other main street businesses across the U.S. will be forced to close in the coming months after Republicans in the Senate recently blocked a $48 billion package to provide relief to owners who have struggled to stay afloat during the coronavirus pandemic. The Bipartisan Small Business COVID Relief Act, which was meant to replenish the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, RRF, passed last year, was co-sponsored by Senator Roger Wicker, but still failed to get more than five Republican senators to support it. The vast majority of GOP lawmakers claim that helping locally owned restaurants to stay open and continue employing people in their communities would worsen inflation and contribute to the deficit, with Senator Ron Paul saying on the Senate floor that dumping more money in the economy is simply pouring $5 a gallon gas on an already out-of-control fire. As a result, said Erika Polmar of the Independent Restaurant Coalition, we estimate more than half of the 177,300 restaurants waiting for an RRF grant will close in the next few months. The bill would have given $40 billion to the independent restaurants left out of the restaurant relief program, which passed last year but ran out of funds in just 3 weeks, with only one in three applicants receiving grants. Polmar said local restaurants across the U.S. expected help, but the Senate couldn't finish the job. Neighborhood restaurants nationwide have held out hope for this program, selling their homes, cashing out retirement funds, or taking personal loans in an effort to keep their employees working. The RRF bill would also have given $2 billion for gyms and fitness centers, $2 billion for live event companies, $2 billion for bus and ferry operators, $1.4 billion for companies near border crossings, which have shut down during the pandemic, and $500 million for minor league sports teams. The Community Gyms Coalition told The Hill that although an RRF replenishment bill passed in the House, the Senate failed to invest in fitness and exercise, despite their obvious benefits for Americans' mental and physical health. After hanging on for another year, hurting restaurants throughout the United States, especially in rural communities, may not see any relief despite the House passing a bill just last month to put more money into the RRF, said Didier Trin, Policy and Political Impact Director for Main Street Alliance, MSA. The fate of these small businesses, including ones owned by women and people of color that were left behind, will be tied to those senators who voted down this lifeline today. Along with Wicker, Senators Lisa Murkowski, Ronnie Blunt, Susan Collins, and Bill Cassidy were the only Republicans who joined Democrats in voting for the bill. The Democrats needed at least 10 Republicans to support the legislation to reach 60 votes required by the legislative filibuster. MSA tweeted, "Senators who ensured this fate instead of providing the relief a small business needs now must be held accountable." Tyler Akin, a board member of the IRC and a chef in Wilmington, Delaware, noted that the GOP's rejection of the bill immediately followed a vote approving $40 billion of military and humanitarian aid for Ukraine, more than $7 billion than President Joe Biden had requested. Ironically, this filibuster followed a vote to stand in solidarity at a similar level of funding with a group of European allies that handled some of the worst effects of the past 2 years with far more grace and unity, Akin told the Philadelphia Inquirer, adding, "It's clear that those who aligned with Senator Pat Toomey today have little or no desire to support small businesses."
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulema's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
حرامخوری این وضعیت رو داره که شیطان رو شریک میکنه تو زندگی و تو مال آدم. عجبا.
Haram earning and haram income is one of the main traps of the Satan for the believers. Some people share their earning with the Satan, and some believers share their income with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Sharing your income with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam means to dedicate some parts of your earnings to the majalis of this holy Imam and spend in the way of Allah.
بعضیا شریک امام حسین میشن تو کاسبیشون.
We have so many traders or sellers who share their income and earnings with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and spend it in the way of Allah. This is how they keep Satan away from their financial life and bring halal abundance to their money. On the other hand, we may find people who become the partner of the Satan through unlawful trading and business. We, as believers, must be very much careful about our financial incomes. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim عليه السلام.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى ابن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led a life which was in balance and harmony with that of the Prophet Muhammad, his great-great-grandfather. His life and the life of Imam al-Kazim was in the line and the direction of the Prophet Muhammad. And of course, the life of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam was a strict adherence and obedience of Islam in so many different ways, whether it was his ethics, his morals, his behaviors, his actions, his statements, we find that Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the copy of the Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, the messenger of Allah. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led an upright, righteous, and noble life. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام إذا كانت لك حاجة إلى الله فقل اللهم إني أسألك بحق محمد وعلي فإن لهما عندك شأنا من الشأن.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, if you have a need from Allah, then say, O Allah, verily I ask you for the sake of Muhammad and Ali, for verily they have a special station with you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You are listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, in the beautiful conversations of the divinely appointed imams, and in this case, the divinely appointed imam, Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam, we find that Imam al-Kazim really, in this dialogue, he speaks about something that is very interesting. He speaks about the disobedience that a human being commits against Allah, meaning how sometimes, unfortunately, may Allah forgive and may Allah forbid, a human being disobeys the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, I'm sure that many of you have heard about the conversations and the dialogues, especially on this program, from all of the divinely appointed imams, but here there is a conversation that the divinely appointed imam, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, the immaculate imam, has with his son. In this beautiful conversation between father and son, we find that Imam al-Kadhim says, "O my little son, beware that Allah sees you commit an act of disobedience from which He has prohibited you." Allahu Akbar. So much time of our life is spent, first and foremost, in the disobedience of Allah. But second, and what makes it worst, is the fact that we don't even consider that we are disobeying Allah in these large parts of our life. Meaning not only are we committing sin and not only are we committing disobedience against the Almighty Allah, but at the same time, we are negligent of it. We don't even think about it. We don't even realize it. And so here we find that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam speaks to his son and he says, "Be very careful that the Almighty Allah not see you committing an act that He has prohibited you." So first and foremost, brothers and sisters, we must know what Allah has prohibited us from. And then we must not do that. And a third very interesting point that comes up here is that we should realize that Allah is seeing us at all times. In some of the definitions of taqwa, piety as is commonly known, this definition is put forth, this awareness that Allah is present, this awareness that Allah sees and hears everything. And so as Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam has said, we must all be very careful that Allah may not see us committing an action that Allah has considered disobedience and that which Allah has prohibited us from. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Tawriya means to make a statement where those who are supposed to get the message in the right way, where the enemies would be misled by that same statement. You know, this is, and if you look at that wasiyyah that Imam wrote, Mansur actually sent a message to his governor in Medina, and he said, "Find out. Where is his wasiyyat? Whom has he appointed as his wasi? And whoever's name you find there, kill him and send his head to me." So Muhammad bin Sulaiman, who was the governor of Medina, went and inquired about it. And then he wrote to Mansur. He said, "The order that you have given to me is impossible to be implemented." "Why?" He said, "I saw the wasiyyat of the sixth imam, and he has named five individuals. The first name is yours, Mansur. The second name is..."